morning.
I can't hear it. I can't hear you.
Good morning. This is a BOE hearing. Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2024. This hearing is for petition number 1-0289-0. This is for parcel number 1-0289-304-0000-008. The appellants are Darren and Nicole Rich. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of this board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their valuation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk to the board, I will not.
Well, it looks like maybe the appellant is showing up. So you might want to wait a moment on that.
Okay.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. You might start that over again so he hears the whole thing then.
Sounds good. Can you hear me, Mr. Rich?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Starting over. This is a BOE hearing. Today is Thursday, March 28, 2024. This hearing is for petition number E-082-23. The appellants are Darren and Nicole Rich. Parcel number is 1-0289-304-0000-008. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of this board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their valuation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk of the board, I will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath. Okay. Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh all evidence and testimony and make a final determination. A written decision will be issued to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals within 30 days of the date of the decision letter. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by the appellant and the assessor, and the board has reviewed it. Chair?
Okay, this is a residential hearing. We're allowing about 30 minutes for the hearing. We'll give the first part of the hearing to the appellant. We'll allow about 10 minutes for his testimony. Then we'll switch to the assessor, allow about 10 minutes for their testimony, and interweaved in here, we'll probably have about 5 minutes of questions and back and forth. So, Mr. Rich, you may proceed.
Okay, thank you. Dear members of the Board of Equalization, thank you for your time today. My name is Darren Rich, and I am here today on behalf of me and my wife as the owners of the duplex located at 420 and 422 South Conway Place in Kennewick. I am protesting the proposed valuation for the property taxes payable in 2024. A quick bit of background about myself and why I'm not attending the hearing in person. I purchased this duplex in 2001 when I was living in the Tri-Cities while working on a project on the Hanford site. Life has taken me to other parts of the country, but I have a lot of good memories of my time in Bend County. As I was leaving the Tri-Cities, I engaged a local family-owned property management company and have worked with the same firm ever since. I say all this simply to say that while I may not live right in town now, I'm not just some absent landlord or faceless investment company. I've always prioritized that this property is well managed and that I'm doing my part for the neighborhood and the community. Now, onto the business at hand. My notice of change of value, which I received September of 2023, proposes an increase in market value from $243,560 to $304,310. That's an increase of 25.1% in a single year. After receiving the notice of change of value, I submitted a taxpayer petition for review of real property determination. However, I'd used comparable property sales from 2023, and the response I received explained that the valuation was based on data prior to January 1, 2023. What I would like to present to you today is some data that I believe demonstrates that the proposed increase of 25.1% is a skewed valuation. Specifically, I'm proposing that an increase of 15% would be more appropriate. I'm going to present several statistics to support my proposal, as well as what I believe explains the discrepancy vis-a-vis the Benton County Assessor's 25.1% increase. First, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, in 2022, the median home price in the US increased from $433,100 to $479,500. That is an increase of approximately 15.2%. According to the State of Washington Office of Financial Management, in 2022, the median home price in the state increased from $560,400 to $647,900. That is an increase of approximately 15.6%. According to the University of Washington, the Washington Center of Real Estate Research, in 2022, the median home price in Benton County increased from $378,200 to $440,300. That is an increase of approximately 14.1%. So at the national, state, and county levels, the increase in home prices are all around 15%. So this is how I came up with my proposed increase. Now, the reason I believe there is such a gap with the assessor's proposed 25.1% increase for this duplex is because the sample size is very small. As provided to me by the Benton County Assessor's Office, the proposed valuation is based on 5 comparable property sales from 2022. So as you can imagine, there were thousands of residential property sales in Benton County that year. And in fact, according to publicly available data reported on the Redfin website, there were approximately 3,125 sales. So basing the valuation on 5 out of more than 3,000 sales means the sample size is less than 0.2% of all sales. Now, taking my argument one step further, I imagine a rebuttal could be that sales of multifamily properties similar to my duplex are more specialized and thus don't directly compare with overall home sales. I think it's a stretch to say there's no comparison, but regardless, that could be a whole other discussion. Even if we just accept that multifamily sales are totally unique for illustration purposes, then it's all too easy that these 5 specific comps are each unique and unrepresentative of a typical duplex. Because the assessor's valuation was based on only 5 comps, I believe there wasn't enough data to support their proposed increase. So in summary, my key points are this. 1, I believe the proposed valuation increase of 25.1% is too high. I believe a 15% increase is more appropriate. Two, I believe 15% is more appropriate because data at three different levels, including specific to Benton County, all support that figure. And three, I believe the discrepancy between the proposed increases is because the 25.1% increase is based on a sample size that is very small relative to the overall data for sales in 2022. Such a small sample size led to a skewed valuation. Thank you for your consideration of my appeal.
Thank you. Okay, let's listen to the assessor for the moment.
Jennifer. Yes. Yes. So the assessor's determination of value is $304,310 with the effective date of January 1st of 2023. The comparable sales provided by the appellant are based on 2023 sales. Therefore, these were not used in determining the 2023 assessed value. Additionally, those two sales that were provided, they were not exposed to the market. They were considered invalid sales. First one appearing to be having been sold between two family members, and the other one was a distressed sale where the owner was deceased and was transferred to the surviving spouse before being sold off. For the assessor's comparable sales, all the comparables are similar in size and age and sold for more than the subject's assessed value. To address the appellant's concerns, specifically on the sample size and the increase year over year, when it comes to the increase year over year, I understand it's shocking to see such a large increase from the 2022 assessed value to the 2023 assessed value. But please keep in mind that that increase in the value, we're not saying that the market increased at that rate. The increase was necessary in order to bring the assessed value in line with the current market, as the 2022 assessed value was below market. And for several years, that property had been below market. And with our statistical trending, the market, we saw unprecedented growth in prices. And so while we're trying to remain pretty conservative in years prior with our statistical trending because we didn't know which direction the market was going to go, we found ourselves lagging behind for several years. So that increase is due to several years of being under the market value. When it comes to the sample size, the five comparables shown here on the comparable sales grid, this is not... this is more of a secondary tool that we utilize to see that our statistical trending is falling in line with the market. This is just another check that we use. It's not how we determine the assessed value. We look at sales as a whole within the relative neighborhood with the subject. So we used over 20 different sales that are single level homes, residential homes, in the statistical analysis based on those 2022 sales. So this is just a subset on this grid here, just to confirm that the statistical trending did fall in within the expected range.
Okay, Jennifer, a couple of questions. First of all, are your comps duplexes?
They are duplexes, correct?
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Now you said that
You had been under market for several years. Was that based on statistical trending, or is this a physical inspection year? What caused you to make that change?
So it was a statistical trend showing. The previous value, there was just that strong growth, right? In 2022, the market peaked. And so in 2022, the assessed value previously was $243,560. Based on the available sales that we utilized to establish the 2022 values, we had based that statistical trend based off of those within that range of 90 to 100% of that market value. But come 2023, we then had to rely on the 2022 sales. And with that, it was just what the statistical data dictated that we needed to bring everybody up to be at market value. Because as a reminder, the 2022 assessed value is going to be based off of the 2021 sales data. So what was available to us at that time, that's what we brought up to 2022. Again, we're remaining relatively more on the conservative side, because again, we didn't know what was going to happen with the market. Everybody thought the rug was going to be pulled out from underneath us. So that's just what the statistical data was telling us.
Can you speak to the appellant's claim about an increase or median increase in Benton County being in the 14%, 14, 15% range?
Sure, I can show that to you. I have my screen share here. So I don't dispute the findings that from 2021 to 2022, there was about a 14% increase. This data here is provided by the Tri-City Association of Realtors. So from 2020 to 2022, there is an over 30% increase in the median sales price for homes in our area, with 14% of that increase being attributed to the past year.
Okay. One thing, you know, I think it's obvious to all of us who've been involved in this for a while that and it's the common saying in real estate is property values are all based on location, location, location. Is there anything specific about this location that caused the higher valuation?
Anything
something about this neighborhood?
About the subject's neighborhood?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with the neighborhood, there's a lot of rental properties in that area. There are quite a few duplexes. So with the sales there, they just warranted the higher, a lot of those were selling for in the higher 300s. You know, if they've had some, you know, some upkeep to them. So it's just what is warranted with that being more of a rental market over there east of 395. There are quite a few duplexes around there.
And I think it says his property is 1728 square feet. Is that for the total duplex or each half of the duplex? How does that work?
We have it for the total duplex. So all these comparables are of similar size and age. So we have the subject total living area is 1,728 square feet for the entire duplex.
Okay. Then I see you made adjustments for the square footage, garage, I see one case.
What's that big adjustment for in your comp number two? It's a grid condition.
That is for the condition reading. That at duplex had some updates. Which is, so that one had some updates to it. So we accounted for that.
So grid condition three, which is your property, Mr. Rich, says it's average. Three means average, four means above average. And so they're making an adjustment to bring that property down to be comparable with yours.
Right, understood. I mean, like I said, I've been working with a locally based property management company the whole time. And I know they let me know about maintenance issues or things like that. You know, how it compares to other duplexes right nearby, I guess I couldn't really say. I guess it would seem to me like any adjustments up or down based on comps are going to be a bit of a guessing game of, you know, how much dollar-wise an adjustment should be made.
Yeah, up to a point. I mean, these guys have been doing it at the assessor's office, have been doing this for many years, and we tend to see consistent adjustments. And they're all relatively small, except for that condition adjustment. In fact, I had had one of those myself this year, so that we talked about. So yeah, but it, you know, somewhat depends what part of Benton County you're dealing with. You know, if you're up into Prosser and some of the outlying environs, it may not be as high as it is in Kennewick and Richland, especially, you know, in the more desirable neighborhoods. So okay.
I have a question for Mr. Rich.
Sure, Chuck.
Okay. Hi. Hey, I'm looking at, well, I listened to what you said, and basically you were saying you thought a 15% increase was reasonable, is what I heard. But I'm looking here at the appeal form that you filled out, and the number you have there for a total is $251,000. That's only a 3% increase over your tax statement. So I guess I'm wondering what number you're asking for. 15% would make your value $279,000. So I'm confused on what's going on there.
Sure. Yeah. Apology for the confusion there. I am now proposing the 15% increase, so that 279 number you were just quoting. The reason for that previous number was that in my appeal, I had pulled a couple of comparable sales that I was using as my basis. However, the response I got back from that appeal was, well, those comps don't count because they were too recent. They were from 2023. Right. So that proposal is an outdated figure.
Okay, so the number then we're that you're asking for is like 279 is what I came up with at 15%.
15% increase.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, and I think all of that goes into improvements in buildings because the land value was the same on both the assessor and the appellant's requests.
Right.
Could we ask a question?
Sure.
On the appellant's comparable sales worksheet, on the line for square footage, his square footage amount that he put down was 3,450 square feet, which is approximately double of what we have on record. And so we were curious what that discrepancy was.
That gets back to my question earlier. Is the square footage for each part of the duplex or the total duplex? And yeah, Mr. Rich.
I would need to double check my records on that. I mean, as it is, it's my understanding that my appeal form is kind of null and void at this point since I wasn't using comps from the right time period. But I can.
This was the double check. So this was your property. Does it have a basement?
No. No.
Okay.
I mean, 3,400 square feet, so I'd say about 1,725 on each side then, right?
It's a two bedroom, one bath on both sides. Both sides, each unit in the duplex have that layout.
Okay. Yeah, we can share the sketch that we have on record, George, if you wanted to see exactly.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's look at that. Yeah, that was confusing to me too, because I noticed he was comparables. He was comparing his property against other, the two sales he listed were for much lower square footage.
You see that?
We can't see the sketch. There it is.
So we have that as each unit is about 864 square feet, which that would sounds reasonable when you're saying that each unit's two bedroom, one bath.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna, you know, right here now, I'm gonna guess that my 3,400 was accidentally duplicating, doubling the square footage.
Okay.
Right.
And just to confirm, yes, the 2023 sales provided by the appellant, yes, that's those aren't the correct time period that we use for the current, the 2023 assessed value, but also just to clarify, I looked a little further into those sales and they're both invalid sales for, they weren't exposed to the market, they weren't on the MLS, they were sold between family members and things like that. They were distressed sales. So even if for next year, just be mindful that for next year, when we look at the sales data, these two sales will not be utilized for next year.
Understood. And I guess that kind of speaks back to what my argument today was, is that, you know, when just looking at a few comps, yeah, you can end up with some pretty unique circumstances that are going to, you know, create a valuation that could be really swayed by one particular sale or another. Whereas, you know, overall county sales for 2022, again, they were what, 14.6%. So, or even, you know, in the 14 to 15% range. So, you know, that's where I'm kind of saying, you know, overall statistics say a different story than just a few comps.
Yeah, the problem with that is that some neighborhoods, they saw larger than a 14% increase. In other neighborhoods may not have seen as much as a 14% increase. So we really have to drill down into the subsets of the individual neighborhoods to really capture what is happening in that local area, because there are different influences based on your location. And so again, with the sales data that we use for your neighborhood, we had over 20 different sales, I think about 22 different sales.
Well, but that information wasn't provided to me. All I got
it's in the packet. It's on page
7 and 8.
7 and 8. So it's a mix of single levels. So it would be duplexes and one stories.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You also said in your statement that the comps are really just a secondary tool, that's not really used to determine the value.
Would you like me to speak to it?
You can go ahead.
Okay. So what we would do, excuse me, is we would take the entirety of the sales that were in that given neighborhood, and from that we would make a selection of 5, 6 of those sales to show in a closer representation of how they compare to the subject property.
So could you clarify a little bit, Chris, the coming up with the actual assessor's value, how do you weight the large number on pages 7 and 8 versus the 5 or so specifics?
Sure. So the sales are represented on pages 7 and 8 are going to be all of the sales from the 2022 year in the subject neighborhood. From those, which are being used to help determine what the statistical trend would be, from those, we would then take a sample of those, look at them individually and go, okay, of these sales, these are the best ones that are most comparable to the subject to use for a example and a better little snapshot of all of these. Here's the 5 that are the closest that carried the most weight. And that was when we would also use those appraisal tools of making sure that we're bracketing, making sure that we're trying to find homes that are similar in age and size and things like that. And using those to go this, because every the reality is every home's gonna be unique. If the home itself had sold in the past year, that's the perfect comp because it's identical to the subject itself. But comparables are never typically 100% unique. So you have to use these adjustments and you have to find these ways to bracket within the bounds of what the subject is in order to come up with a representation of what that value should be.
So any knowledge on the weighting of the different averages, you know, the 5 versus the 2 pages?
The weighting of the different averages.
Yeah, well, I don't show what the actual increase was on those other pages, but
yeah, I'm just not sure how we did the calculation of the appraised value based upon the two different data sets, one being high level and the other being focusing down on five local that are more
ultimately the focusing down on the local level would be just a way to further verify that our mass appraisal technique of the neighborhood as a whole was accurate.
So, I see. So if it seemed representative, you'd just stay with the average of the larger data set.
Right. It would be like going, you know, here's this entire pool that we used. Within this pool, you wanted to see a handful of specifics. So here's a few specifics that show you that we're bracketing those details appropriately.
Chris, do you have any details on what the average or median percent increase in the just in Kennewick was for 2023?
Oh boy.
As of 1/1/23?
Yeah.
I can let me see if I can pull it up in here if I've got access to my network stuff.
For the assessed value average or sales price?
Sales price increase between as of for the 2022 year, he was citing a 15% increase for Benton County. I'm trying to figure out, is it different just for Kennewick?
I would not have that exact statistic on hand. I could run the number, but I'm trying to also be conscious of the time that we're at here.
Yeah, we're basically out of time. So, okay. Guys, you have Peter, Chuck, any further questions?
Not for me.
No.
Okay. I think we understand your position, Mr. Rich. Okay, let's close the hearing and then we'll deliberate real quick. I see the next appellant is in the waiting room.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
We got the new appellant.
Hold on.
Yeah, we have the new.
Good morning. This is a BOE hearing. Today is Thursday, March 28, 2024. This hearing is for petition E-092-23 and E-093-23. The appellant is Wayne Pearson and parcel number is 1-2287-300-000-000. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of this board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their valuation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk of the board, I will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath. Mr. Pearson? Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth?
Yes.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh all the evidence and testimony and make a final determination. A written decision will be issued to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals within 30 days of the date of the decision letter. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by the appellant and the assessor, and the board has reviewed it. Chair?
This is an agricultural hearing, and the appellant actually has two petitions before the board. They seem to use the same language, so I'd like to hear them both concurrently, if that's okay. So with that, Mr. Pearson, we'll give you about 10 minutes, then we'll hear from the assessor and we'll have some back and forth and see where we go. So go ahead and start.
Okay. Just trying to get some things across because not everybody's familiar with Horse Heaven. Horse Heaven is the driest place in the world that commercially grows dryland wheat. Okay. And I grew up there. I farmed there. And I am now a Washington State Department of Ag licensed commercial ag consultant. I'm also a CCA. That stands for Certified Crop Advisor. It's a national accreditation. And I am an expert in the field of, that's a nice pun there, in the field of growing cereals and forages under extreme dryland conditions. And the reason I bring that all up is because not only have I farmed there, but I take care of ground all the way around that. And over the years, I go clear to the base of Mount Adams. I've helped the assessor's office in Klickitat County figure out what it costs to farm the ground in the Bickleton area and Goldendale area. So, and that's different from Horse Heaven. Okay, and I bring this all up because some of the information that was sent back to me was, it shows the different sales of ground on Horse Heaven, but it's considerably further over to the west. Now, that would be the old Gould place, and that's off of 221 and County Well. Okay, there's a big difference across Horse Heaven. There's about five different areas, distinct areas, that have more rainfall. Our average, where the ground in question is, which is farmed together, it's two quarters that are just, they're farmed common. The average yield there is 33 bushels to the acre. Okay, now, that's also the county average. And I know this because I also served on the Benton County Association of Wheat Growers years ago as the president, and I was on the board of directors of the state association. So, and having seen what the cost of inputs is and what you actually get out of the ground, and you find out that you're really not in control of very much. The ground that was shown that was sold over between Peralt Road and Gould Road, you need to know that that was between two old farms. Okay, they wanted it, and that particular ground was one of the three perfect farms in the Horse Heaven area. Two of them in central Horse Heaven and one over in western Horse Heaven that also goes into Yakima County. By a perfect farm, I mean that all of the ground itself is put together. You can get to it without even going out onto a county road if you don't want to. And that makes it a lot cheaper to farm, easier to farm. Okay, let's go back here to section 22 where my stuff is. Okay, that ground is capable of producing 45 bushel wheat if it rains. And it isn't just if it rains, it's if it rains at the right time. And that's why on Horse Heaven, and people call me, they don't all do purchasing from me, but a lot of them use me for consultation. I take care of roughly 65,000 acres of dryland wheat across Benton, Yakima, and Klickitat County. Okay, so I've seen a lot of weird stuff and lived through a lot of weird stuff. Okay, and the farming part of that aspect has to do more with timing than it does with money. And so you can have no money and do everything on time, and you'll come out better off than if you'd spent, were late and threw a lot of money at it. But it's all things that you can't control unless it rains. And that's why we farm the way that we do in a summer fallow rotation there, because there isn't enough to grow a crop every year. Okay, now I can go on and on about that because I'm also a soil scientist, but I can go on about that. But let's go to some other parts here as far as pricing. If the value is made on what that ground will yield, it's what the cost of wheat is. And so I don't know if you've checked the price of wheat of late, but this morning you're looking at DNS and hard red winter in the $7 and something range. But, and then the soft wheat is considerably lower, $5.60. Those are all prices that are at Portland, okay? It's like the difference between, would you say a nice, comfortable income is at least $80,000? Okay. Do any of you make in that part of the world? Okay. That's gross. And there's a big difference between you making $80,000 gross and what you're taking home. Okay. So it's really hard to change the value on the ground when the inputs continue to go up and the value of the wheat, and not just for inflation, but the price just is not there. So let's say if wheat was a soft white wheat was $5.60 right now, okay, it's going to cost you approximately 20 to 30 cents a bushel to get it to the river. Now, that depends on whether you did it in your truck or whether you hired it and brought it down. Difference being fuel surcharges and labor. Okay. Farmers have a tendency to never pay themselves for much of anything. And that's why we still do what we do, because we don't know any better. Okay. So that's just to get it to the river. Now, it costs approximately, because I sold some wheat last fall, greatly disappointed in the fact that it cost me nearly 73 cents just to get it to Portland. So just start doing the math and start subtracting of what that price is that I was shown in paperwork from your office of what the value of that is, how that was shown. Okay. It sucks. And my ground itself is too small for me to farm and make a living. So I've had it leased since I've had it. I farmed it with my dad and my brother and my uncle when I was younger. I know its capabilities and that, and I've watched this up and down and goes and other families as well. So when you can't farm it, there's you can either lease it out and hope for the best because you are receiving a net then, or you have to sell it. Okay. I would play absolute hell to try to get $550 an acre from that particular ground in that area. Okay. And when I was talking earlier about the areas on Horse 7, anything that has the ridge, okay, that's above the Yakima Valley, that has the ridge, comes up and crowns, and then the farm ground falls to the south. Within about 2 to 3 miles of that ridge, that ground gets more measurable moisture. Now, keep in mind that you're talking about an area that we get all excited over hundredths of an inch, because on average, at my little part of the world there, it's like 6.8 inches of rainfall in a year. And when you're actually going out there and measuring accumulated moisture in a rain gauge that was from fog, which it does, and it's if we can get a half to a hundredths of an inch out of fog, it all adds up. Except in that part of the world, a quarter of an inch of rain and a quarter of an inch of rain do not equal a half inch of rain. It's that extreme. Okay, so I've touched on the value of the wheat, and there's only so many things that you can do, and that's to manage your overhead, okay, and to try to get to where you're either spending less to get to that average, or if it rains, and it rains at the right time, it has to rain at the right time or it doesn't amount to squat, so that you can fill those heads, take advantage of what you spent for fertilizer to get into the ground, and that's what your potential is. Well, it doesn't happen all that often. Those are the years that you can pay those extra couple of dollars, okay, to do some things, but on the short years, you can't. That's why this ground, let's say if any of you in there decide, hey, I want to buy this ground, I'm going to start farming, it'll never pay for itself. At that, and you're not going to, I'm not going to be given any more than that unless it's some kind of a grudge thing, that somebody has to have it so that they can have it before their neighbors do. And they have to have a huge amount of ground to make that work, because that other ground has to be paying for this until it gets to the point where the debt is gone. All right.
Okay. Mr. Pearson, hang on a second. Here's the problem I'm having. I mean, you're giving us all kinds of testimony about land quality in different parts of the Horse Heavens, rainfall differences, perhaps. But you're not giving us evidence. You haven't shown us soil surveys that demonstrate your testimony.
Do you know how to read one?
Do I have what?
Do you know how to read a soil survey?
Oh, the county does.
But not you, and I'm addressing you. I don't think that this anything positive is going to come of this for me at all. But if I don't give it a shot to at least try to thoughtfully, respectfully, teach the general public so that you can at least make an informed decision. I can show you some other figures. I've got them right here. And there's a reason why I didn't just send this into you. I don't have time. I work two full-time jobs. I farm. We have a commercial flock of sheep, and I'm an agronomist. Okay? This has gotten me jerked around since October, changing dates, having to change what I do and whatever, and I'd come in and visit with you in purpose or in person, but I'm on crutches because I broke my bloody foot about 10 days ago. So please, what I can show you, I'll give you some figures, okay, whether you take it to heart or not. Let's say you grew 33 bushel wheat on this ground, okay, and you did net $5, okay, that's $52,800, okay? Now, it costs approximately $180 an acre to farm that ground. That's a deficit of $480 over the whole thing, or $15 loss on it. Now, since that part isn't important to you, let's just talk about a few other things that increase the value of ground. Okay, one of which is what? It's got to have electricity to it to be used for something else. There isn't an electric pole near there within a mile. Okay, and having had to purchase electric poles, there's no way that anybody's going to do that unless it's some kind of a home site. Well, if you're going to have a home site, what had you better have? You better have water. There's a lot of 1,000-foot dry wells all the way around there. Most people in that area have to haul their domestic water from the county well over near County Well Road and 221. It's about 10 miles. Okay, so with that being said, if there's no electricity and there's no water and there's no hope of doing anything else with that ground other than to graze it, because I've looked into that avenue as well, which could be done, would have to be done carefully, and your cash flow is yearly on that if you custom graze it, versus wheat production. So you folks tell me what increased the value of that ground. It isn't going to rain anymore. Things change. They ebb and they flow, and I've seen it all. I'm almost 64 years old, and I've spent all but 4 years of my life in Benton County. Okay? So please tell me, and I hope I didn't sound too harsh, but it's how usually I end up dealing with people within government, is they don't do what I do, they don't understand it, they don't care, they have no skin in the game. So please tell me why you're going to increase the value of this ground.
Okay, let's hear from the assessor then.
Hi. Is that Ricky? Yeah, hi. So hi there. First off, just a little background. Washington state law states that we have to value properties at 100% of market value and at their highest and best use. Washington state law also says that if the land is being used for public good or farming activity, it can be valued at what's called use value. Mr. Pearson is correct. I don't doubt his background or his education. It sounds great. I would love to sit down and talk to him more. Benton County does have dramatically different dry land, ag land throughout the county that gets different rainfalls. So what we do is we work with wheat farmers to come up with a dry land ag values and current use values. And the current use value is what you actually pay the taxes on. And that is, so if we want to go to that page, we can go to page 20 of the packet, because actually Mr. Pearson's taxes went down this year because of the current use value.
By about a dollar.
So we get current use value by taking the average wheat price for the year before, which I obtained from Horsehaven Grain. Horsehaven Grain is local, and they use the local wheat prices.
I use them.
So so we take that price, and that comes into our value. But Mr. Pearson also spoke about his yield. His average yield is 33 to 35. So when working with the wheat farmers I work with, we decided that's going to be from 30 to 35 is going to be our top ground type thing. We're going to call that dry ag one. We go all the way down to dry ag five, like where some of our sales are. That is in dry, some really bad wheat ground land. But we take that into account.
Go to the intersection of Lincoln and Farnham.
So if you look on page 20,
I have a yield average. And in 2021, we take an account when it's drier than usual. So we do have the 5-year average right now is sitting right about 33 bushels, which he stated for dry ag land one. So that's why we classify this ground at that. And then you can see the price per bushel for the years is listed there. And then you see we summer fallow it. We take the gross income, we subtract costs that are allowed to be cost subtracted by law. And then we times it by the cap rate. The cap rate is given to me by the Department of Revenue. I have no say in that. So, and then costs and stuff, the wheat farmers I work with, they talk to me about costs, and that's where we get those numbers. Those numbers are set in stone. I have nothing to do with them besides just reaching out and getting the facts. So that's the value Mr. Pearson pays taxes on. Because of his other value, we do have to value it at market. That's what the law says. So that's why the comps are there to show why we get the value we come up with. But again, a lot of it has to do with that we do have this area classified as our top wheat ground for the county. And that's working with other wheat farmers in the area that I do work with that will come in and speak to me and talk to me. And that's how I come up with that. If you want, we can go through that data.
It's not necessary.
So.
It's not necessary.
I don't know if you have any questions or if you want me to go more in depth, but
no.
I just wanted to touch on that we classify, he is being classified as wheat ground, not as homesite ground, not anything else. He is being classified as all the farmers in the area are with both parcels.
Thank you. I appreciate the information. If I might just ever so briefly, because I'm going to run out of time now, is one thing is I was very concerned about the increase of the value, even though I already knew that that's how the taxes were brought about, is by the yield and that. But what I'm afraid of is things continue to just get marked up, marked up, marked up, marked up. And then somebody, whether it's county or state, decides that this should be taxed higher without anything increasing it whatsoever. It's just, I know we're going to increase the taxes on this ground. That was my main concern. And that's why I'm trying to use an opportunity to explain that maybe one might share that with others who do not understand.
And your taxes went down this year. So
a dollar.
That's how the current use, that's why the current use system is there.
Yes. Yes. All right.
Ricky, I got to tell you, I'm really surprised at that cap rate. I mean, I don't think anybody could get a loan at 6.59%
or 9.2%. The cap rate is not an interest rate. The cap rate is a Department of Revenue formula that takes into account interest rates across the country play into that, but also values across the country, across our state play into it, values of the county. It's a very weird formula that the state comes up with, then they send it to me, and that's how we get to the 6.59. It is not an interest rate formula. It is not that. Right. They take into account values and all this other stuff.
Right, but that's what an investor would expect to return from that property. And as we all know, the lower the cap rate, the higher the valuation. So I'm a little concerned that that rate is not reasonable, but I don't know if that's a state rate. I don't know what we can do about it, but
there's nothing I can do about that. And actually the cap rate works inversely. So, and yeah, like I said, there's nothing I can do. You can see the history of the cap rate, the 5-year history of it is on that page 20. But like you said, like the form you're holding up, it comes to me from the state. And I have absolutely zero control over that.
Yeah, you notice, let's see, what year was it? We had COVID in 2020, coming out of COVID and probably starting, I think at the start of 2022, the Fed started increasing their interest rates.
Yeah.
They did.
So that plays into it, but there's other things.
Well, I know, but going from 6.71 to 6.59 actually went down. I don't know if that's reasonable, but.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not, yeah, like I said, I have no control. As you can see, I included page 21 is the form I get from the state, and it tells me what it is.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Peter, Chuck, any questions?
I don't think at this time. I think when we deliberate, I'd like to talk to the cap rate.
Yeah, I have no questions.
Okay. Anything further, Mr. Pearson?
No, just thank you for listening to me. I did try to be as thoughtful as possible and try to teach you. I'm sorry if I sounded like a crusty old whatever, but we're lambing and we're farming. And I just, anyway, and like I said, I doubt if anything is ever going to change, but I had to make myself do it. So, no, okay.
I understand. Actually, one of our board members also has a dry land wheat farm, not in this area, but up in the Palouse area. So,
God, you mean God's country where they can grow some damn wheat?
Yeah, but the prices aren't any better.
Got lots more. Okay. All right. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I do my other job.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go ahead and close the hearing, Mary Lou.
Good morning. This is a BOE hearing. Today is Thursday, March 28, 2024. This hearing is for petition number E-094-23. The appellants are Ryan and Morgan Rosenthal with parcel number 1-1588-103-0000-039. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of this board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their evaluation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk of the board, I will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath. The appellants do not appear to be present. Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh all the evidence and testimony and make a final determination. A written decision will be issued to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals within 30 days of the date of the decision letter. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by the appellant and the assessor, and the board has reviewed it. Chair?
Okay, this is a residential hearing. Appellant is not present, so I will read from her petition. The increase in taxable value from 22 to 23 jumped by $189,460, which seems a bit excessive. As I understand, the assessment was done in January of 2023. There are no houses similar to ours that sold for $700,000 to date. Houses of similar square footage and or lot size were sold for greater than our estimate of true and fair value or new builds or recently built homes. The appellant has provided four sale, one of which is a 2023 sale, two of which are 2021 sales and one of which is a 2022 sale near the assessment date. So I guess at this point, let's hear from the assessor.
Yes, the assessor's determination of value is $700,600 with the effective date of January 1st, 2023. The appellant states that no houses similar to the subject have sold for $700,000. Of the four comparable sales provided by the appellant, all of them, you'll notice, are smaller than the subject by about 500 square feet or more. And then the 2023 sale was not included, was not considered in our analysis for determining the 2023 assessed value due to the effective date. All the 2022 comparable sales that the assessor's office provided, all of the sales that are 2,700 square feet or more living area, those all sold for above $700,000.
Okay, I noticed she also had one comp or comp number one on the comparable sales worksheet was a condition four, which is above average. But and as you correctly stated, all the square footages are approximately 15% or so smaller than the appellant property. Okay, so you provided, you have a condition for sale or property as well. You made $100,000 adjustment. And the property type here is what, a two-story?
Correct, yes, two-story.
Okay. And okay, that had a pool. She had no pool. Okay, and then I see you made some adjustments for square footage.
I guess I have a question on that comp one, which is a huge adjustment. But if I look at the ones next to it, it's the same grid class and stuff, or grid condition, but there's zero adjustments. And so I don't quite understand that.
Yeah, I see that too.
Yeah, so when looking at the condition, there's various degrees of updates that have been made. And for those comps two and three, they had updates made to them, but they were pretty minimal. Comp three, for instance, that had some updates, but they were done after the sale. So at the time of the sale, the $722,000 sales price is based off of when it sold at an average condition.
So it should be actually three rather than four showing here then.
Right, but the way it pulls the data from our system, it updates to the current, what's the data in,
right,
in our database now since it's been updated, because following the sale, we went out and in 2023, this was an active reval. So this information was updated after these sales.
And same with comp two, are you seeing that's the same situation?
Yeah, comp two, that one has, if you look at the listing, it has no updates there.
Right, but it's condition four.
Yeah, at the time of the sale, there were no updates.
Okay. And is that same with comp four?
Yeah, four and five. So there's varying degrees of updates that can be made. So when looking at the sales listings, it was determined that there wasn't enough substantial remodeling updates done to warrant $102,000 adjustment. It was pretty comparable to the subject.
Okay.
A question I had was on the ages of the house. I know if it's a newer one, you drop the value a little bit to get it comparable. But if I look at, say, number one, it's 2007, you have $13,000. And if I look at number six, it's 2007 and it's $8,000. So is there...
I believe there's other factors that are involved in that calculation when it's generated, where it also takes into account, you know, square footage and other variables. So it's not a flat, you know, year.
Dollars per year. It's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense, because square footage is taken into account separately. I would think it should be a fairly level, since it's just based on age, would seem like it should be a fairly level dollars per year.
Yeah, there are multiple factors that feed into it. I don't know the algorithms behind in the software, but it's, you'll notice when you look at it, it won't be a straight dollar per year.
See if I can get the comper.
I mean, I'm looking at the various sales here as adjusted, and
actually, it probably has wide. To do. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It may have to do more so with the grid condition. Because when you look at age and condition and depreciation and how it's applied, that probably has something to do with it as well.
Again, that doesn't make a lot of sense, because you're separately adjusting for condition and square footage. I ask you to look into that, provide the board an explanation of how that works.
So can I share my screen with you, showing you the program?
What's that?
May I share my screen with you that shows you the program?
Sure. Sure.
Let me see. Here's Comper. Okay. So here's the Comper program, and this is actually for the subject. I pulled it up and it had all the comps saved that we then export that PDF out, excuse me, to our petition, our answer to the petition. And you can come down here. Let me, got stuff blocking what I'm trying to look at right here. We can view the rates. So these are all the factors that the system itself comes up with in determining what those adjustments are going to be.
Okay, I see quality, right? I see good condition. I don't see age. Where's age?
The base rates, it shows year built to percent per year.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in 2007, that's had updates versus one that hasn't. It's going to be different.
Well, but that's condition. That's nothing to do with age. That's separate. You count for that in condition, not in age. Year built. Rate, well, 100%, but doesn't say, you're not really telling us how age varies from year to year to year here. So here we have the subject built in 2005, where we have like comp six, is built in 2007. Again, I can't define how that's created in your system. It shouldn't have anything to do with square footage. It shouldn't have anything to do with condition. Shouldn't have anything to do with construction class. Age is age. And I'm okay here. Comp one, you have a 13,000 2007 sale. Comp one had a 13,000. $13,700 negative adjustment. Yet comp two was built a year later, and it only had a 17,000 negative adjustment. 2009 had a even higher negative adjustment, but then we go to comp 6 and it's built in 2007, the same as the appellant, and it has a, what is it, $800, I can't tell what that is, $8,800 adjustment.
I'm wondering if it has to do with the time adjustment where some of these were sold in 21, 22. I don't know how sophisticated it is when it time adjustments.
Yeah, we'll have to look into it and see
how it's generating that.
Yeah, I think the board needs to understand that better. Again, I'm not too, I don't understand the value, the differences in grid condition four, where there are different values based on the condition. Again, I'm looking at sales 1, 2, 3, 4. They all have different values for grid condition. And I'm not understanding why that is.
Okay. So the subject is in Reval 3, which was our area of physical inspection last year. I'm trying to think of the best, you explained it pretty well earlier. When the date, yeah, when the sales occurred, for example, comparable sales 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, okay, I see it. Yeah, okay.
And those sales occurred, yeah. They were a 3, but then they were in the year, last year that we were actively working. So when the data is pulled from the comper system and used to create the comps, it looks at what's in there as of that day. And when they were physically inspected after the sale, that's when their conditions were raised from a 3 to a 4.
Yeah. Is it reasonable to have $102,000 adjustment from going from class 3 to class 4? That seems kind of high of an adjustment.
Well, it's based on the factor.
287,493.
Well, in that case, if it was a lower, if it was less than that adjusted sales price at the bottom of the 721 would have been higher.
Right. I understand that. But I'm trying to understand that. I mean, that's $100,000 is a large adjustment, okay, on a $700,000 house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to understand, is that reasonable?
It falls within the guidelines of reasonable that don't need explanation in fee appraisal, which would be 25% gross, 10%. So the 50% net's a little bit high, but overall the gross is within that 25 standard that a fee appraisal would look to without any additional clarification, especially for an area that's got a lot of sales like this.
So on the positive side, George, isn't it the large adjustment reduction to the benefit of the appellant?
It is, but
so
again, I just get concerned when I see 100, just as I did on that other fee appraisal, I get real concerned when I start seeing six figure adjustments. So,
yeah, I understand you're wanting to understand it from the side of it only works for the benefit of the appellant type.
Okay.
I'm not as concerned with it.
Yeah, I see it. There's a lot of variation in these properties. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, the low end 588 and the high end 790, I think it was.
Those last ones on the list, that were the...
Yeah, so the ones, this comp 6, 7, and 8, so those were 2021 sales where there was a, you know...
Oh.
Different market in that year. If you were to remove those three, I included them because the appellant had their 21 sales. So okay. If we were to remove those, your grid estimate median would increase
okay.
to 721. Right.
That works better then. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's much better. Okay. All right. Peter, Chuck, any questions?
Good.
No, I'm good.
Okay. I would like you to get back to us at some point on this age, how your system calculates age adjustments.
Yeah, we can look into that for sure.
Okay. All right, Mary Lou, let's go ahead and close the hearing then. We'll deliberate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, and this is a BOE hearing. Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2024. This hearing is for petition number E-096-23. The appellants are Joshua Lewis and Haley Collin. Parcel number is 1-1489-404-0000-017. The Board of Equalization is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers to make legal decisions consistent with other federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. The role of this board is to review the evidence and testimony provided by both parties and determine the fair market value of the property as of January 1st of the 2023 assessment year for taxes payable 2024. Washington state law presents presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the appellant to prove their valuation is correct to a legal standard of clear, cogent, and convincing. This hearing is recorded and all testimony is under oath. As clerk of the board, I will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath. The appellants do not appear to be present. Do each of you who are testifying today affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh all the evidence and testimony and make a final determination. A written decision will be issued to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals within 30 days of the date of the decision letter. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by the appellant and the assessor, and the board has reviewed it. Chair?
Okay, this is a residential hearing. The appellant is not present and has stated they did not plan to attend the hearing. Specific reasons they given for their request evaluation are: we purchased this home in 2020. No improvements have been made during this time, but several issues with the home have come up. There's a crack in the ceiling across the entire kitchen, pointing to potential foundation issues. The flooring that was installed throughout the home in 2015 is cheap and in some spots was installed incorrectly. Therefore, it needs to be replaced throughout the house. The AC unit needs to be replaced in the next couple of years, has had issues since we moved in. The garage door opener doesn't work. The fireplace has never worked. The sprinkler system has broken lines in multiple places and several sections are completely unusable. In addition to the issues with our home, there have been 3 drive-by shootings at a home visible from ours less than 60 yards away. This area is no longer a seller's market. Houses in our neighborhood have gone on the market for 6 months before ultimately being pulled off the market. There's absolutely no way we would be able to get the assessor's determination of true and fair value if we were trying to sell our home in the near future. The appellant provided four sales. However, the board notes that they were all 2020 and 2021 sales, and no adjustments have been made. The appellant also did not provide any evidence to help us determine the comparability of those properties. So let's hear from the assessor at this point.
The assessor's determination of value is $317,160 with an effective date of January 1st, 2023. The appellant states the subject property is a crack in the ceiling, incorrectly installed flooring, a malfunctioning AC unit, an inoperable garage door opener and fireplace, and broken sprinkler lines. The appellant also states there have been 3 drive-by shootings nearby and the area is no longer a seller's market. The subject property is valued with a 3 condition rating, which applies the depreciation associated with the deferred maintenance and obsolescence expected of a 45-year-old home. I will note that the home has had extensive updates done with an updated roof, siding, windows, remodeled, the entire interior has been remodeled, and with the kitchen and bathrooms. But despite the upgrades to it.
Was that done before or after the purchase?
Before, the previous owners did it to put it on the market, or
okay.
Maybe they were looking at that, but it was prior to the sale. So despite, typically we would have that as a four condition, but despite all those upgrades and the deferred maintenance, it is valued at a three condition rating, which accounts for that deferred maintenance that the appellant mentioned. When it comes to the drive-by shootings, those neighborhood influences will be baked into the market sales data for similar homes in that area. So we don't adjust for that. The comparable sales that the appellant provided, their two or 2020 sales. So those were least relevant because we had sufficient more recent sales. So those weren't included. When it came to the 2021 sales, comp A was a split entry. It's a different style home, so it was not considered. Comp B, that one sold in below average condition as it was an incomplete remodel project when it was put on the market. For the assessor's comparable sales, all the comparables sold above the subject's 2023 assessed value, and they are of similar age and size to the subject.
So, excuse me, you said comp B, it was sold, what was it? You said it was sold before the complete remodel was complete?
Right, yes, it was in below average condition when it was put on the market. It was like a remodel project that was incomplete.
Okay. Good.
Which is why it sold for that lower below value market.
Were you guys able to independently validate the drive-by shooting statement?
No.
Well, and also we'd need to know the timing of them too, because the one, two, and three comparables, you know, was that before or after those sales? So we just don't know.
We don't know.
And he didn't say.
I have a question looking at the comparables. I see a 7 and an 8, which are closer to the subject, but I don't see them on the...
Yeah, sorry about that. Looks like that got cut off. So 7 and 8, those are... Let me pull those up. I can pull them up on my screen here.
Okay.
8 was the appellant's comp B that sold in below average condition. And comp 7... that was just an average condition home, but let me show you. And they're both 2021 sales.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, those are close.
Yeah, that's kind of Vancouver. It's off of Vancouver. And it's north of 27th. So it's...
I can share my screen. I've got the map pulled up so you can get a better idea of what you're looking for if you'd like.
Yeah, I know about where it is. I mean, it's way far south. So.
Okay, so zoom back in really quick. So there's the subject right here. And then if we zoom out, we kind of see we are north of 45th, south of 10th.
Yeah, well, 27th is the major east-west in that area, so.
It's south of.
So way south of 27th.
Yeah,
between 36th and 45th.
And Vancouver, I'm trying to recall. Okay, that's way east of that new development up in there. Okay. Canyon Lakes. That's east of Canyon Lakes. Is that correct? So these are older homes.
It's an older development just built before Canyon Lakes, but it was one of the main, when the big boom happened in the 70s, 80s, 70s, that's where that subdivision really came from initially.
Excuse me, who's speaking?
Oh, sorry, this is Bill.
Okay.
Oh, how are you?
I snuck in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't see your name on the lister. So I don't, nothing special about the house, I can see. Chuck, Peter, any questions?
No, I think I understand it. I'm good.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, anything further from the assessor's office?
No additional comments here, thank you.
Okay. Mary Lou, let's go ahead and close the hearing. We'll deliberate.
Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend.